Welcome to Olympic and Bundy, my podcast out of West LA, looking at matters that really affect us here and nationwide. Really, each night I get off the news at 10 p.m., it's about 11 o'clock midnight, and I drive by the brand new Suicide Prevention Center. That sign is front and center at the Century City location of Olympic and Century Boulevard West. You look upstairs, you see the lights are on. It's that 24/7 crisis hotline. People are there to take any call at any hour. And it makes me feel so good and so comforted. We're keeping this podcast light and bright as we start out here because I know that we're going to be a voice for so many others. I think everybody has been touched by suicide in some way, whether you know somebody who's attempted, you maybe thought about it yourself, you know a loved one who lost somebody. So we're here to be that empowerment, that strength that I know comes from Dee Dee Hirsch Mental Health Services each and every day. So I'd like my guests to introduce themselves. They stepped out of their office to come to my office here at Olympic and Bundy to talk about this issue. It can be hard to talk about it, but we're going to do it. It's oh so real for so many. All right. So, Lynn, why don't you start us out? Give us your name and your title.
My name is Lynn Morris, and I'm the Senior Vice President of Clinical Operations at Dee Dee Hirsch Mental Health Services.
Okay. I'm just going to put your mic a little closer for you so you can be strong and powerful. Okay. Lynn, how long have you worked for Dee Dee Hirsch?
I've worked for Dee Dee Hirsch for 19 years.
Oh, my gosh. You're a veteran.
I am. And it's a passion of mine. And prior to this position, I actually directly oversaw our suicide prevention center. So it's very close to my heart.
Okay, so I think I met the folks at Dee Dee Hirsch in Los Angeles maybe 25 years ago. I was asked as a news anchor to just come and MC the Alive and Running 5K walk, run. And I thought, you know, as an MC, no problem, I'll just come out there. Coincidentally, by the time the event came upon us, I lost a friend to suicide. So he was a young man I'd been set up on a date with. Only once or twice, but he was a friend of a friend, so I knew his story very well. I knew his family very well. They were one of those perfect families, that family you looked at and go, I idolize that family. They went to the river every year with their boats and their gear and all their friends from decades, you know, and this young man played baseball and was gorgeous, and we just thought, you're kidding me. Not Matt. I don't believe it to this day. So it's one of those issues that we know it affects so many. So Lynn, you've been there. You know the facts. You know the figures. Why don't you just start us out here with the hotline? Anybody in need can call this hotline 24/7.
Yeah, we're part of the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline, and the number is 1-800-273-8255. It's 24/7. We have English and Spanish-speaking counselors available. And we have caring counselors who will listen to you if you're in pain or if you're worried about somebody who is at risk of suicide. You can also call and ask, what do I do? How do I help this person?
You have questions?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, coincidence, I had a man doing some construction at my house, and he told me he was a volunteer for the hotline.
Oh, interesting.
And I thought, really? The guy doing construction is volunteer. So it reminded me that so many of us are touched, and I didn't even ask how he was touched, what brought him to the door to step up to volunteer. But you have a bank of people. So I'm driving by at midnight. How many people are up there at midnight when I'm driving by?
So our highest peak time is usually the evening hours. Okay. So that's roughly when we have about 25 people there. Mm-hmm. By midnight, we probably have about 12 people there, including our bilingual Spanish counselors, as well as some of our volunteers and shift supervisors. We are very fortunate that we have 200 dedicated staff and volunteers that work on our suicide prevention and volunteer on our suicide prevention line. These are often people, as you mentioned, who have been touched by suicide, who have been touched by mental health issues in their family and want to give back and do something to help. You know, we often get the question of, how can I help? What can I do? I know suicide is increasing in the United States. I feel like I need to do something, but I don't know what to do. You can volunteer. You can donate to your suicide prevention center. You can help out. in other ways as well.
You can do the Alive and Running Walk.
Absolutely.
That's in September.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. And that's a big fundraiser, which is a lot of fun because I say the word fun because I just feel like we're a big family, all of us who come to this event, whether it's a mothers, sons, children and strollers, people bringing their dogs. It just really is a powerful coming together here in Los Angeles. And I'm sure every city has their organization where people are coming together. So I'm just curious about the Lifeline. Is it mostly staff or mostly volunteers?
We're mostly volunteers.
No kidding.
We would not survive without our volunteers mm-hmm. on the suicide crisis line. And they go through very intensive training, close to 100 hours of training, and dedicate at least 4 hours a week to work on the crisis line. And they are there for people in their deepest, darkest hour and listen to the pain they're in, because often people who are suicidal don't necessarily want to die. They want to end the unbearable pain that they're in. And for someone to hear them and not judge them and make them know, help them to understand that there's help out there is life-saving.
Well, God bless these people who are willing, like you said, to hear other people's pain, to take on the training to do that, to be there each and every week. It must really come from the heart, those people who want to be there to be part of it.
Oh, it absolutely does. They're some of the most genuine, authentic, giving people that I've ever met in my life. So we're lucky to have them.
Well, D.D. Hirsch Mental Health Services is the organization that runs the Suicide Prevention Center here in Los Angeles. And it was an exciting time when you all unveiled that sign and it had this big news conference with celebrities and just let us know that you're there.
Yeah, it was an absolute dream come true for us. And to have the suicide prevention sign on the outside of the building to show
can't miss it.
That we are erasing stigma. There is no shame in talking about suicide. We want people to know there's a resource and that there's help. And we've had people walk in off the street after seeing the sign outside and walk in and say, I need help. And have had some pretty inspiring stories so far. So it's wonderful. It's working. It's showing people there's a resource.
I'm going to have to ask people who drive by that, because obviously I've been affiliated with you all for a while, what they think when they see that sign. Like, wait a minute. It's just a big sign, and it's a big building, and it's a gorgeous building. And we're talking about it like that. I'm having Melissa Rivers, who was on our podcast last week, and she's one of your VIPs. Obviously, she's touched by suicide because of the loss of her father. Mm-hmm. And she's on your board.
She is.
She emceed your recent event, your benefit. She was talking about people just walking in saying, I see you.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And, you know, the sign on the outside of the building, as we see cars go by, we get honks from cars, we get thumbs up from cars. We definitely get people also walking in. We had one woman who literally said, I felt like walking into traffic and I was looking for a sign from God to tell me that I should be on this earth. Mm-hmm. And lo and behold, she passed our sign. And that was literally her sign.
Right.
And she walked in and
Wonderful.
We were able to get her some help.
Wonderful. I think that we should let people know why the sign, the significance of the sign, because you all talked about it at the news conference, why it matters that a sign is like that out there, so front and center.
I think because people don't talk about suicide. It's very much still a topic that's hard for people to talk about. And when people do talk about it, they sometimes can feel shame or feel stigma or feel guilt. And we want people to know that there's no shame in talking about suicide. We need to bring it out of the shadows. We need to stop the silence around it and really start talking, because you can't help somebody if you're not talking about what the problem is and what the issue is. And we want people to know that if you're suffering from a mental health issue, whether that's depression or anxiety or something else, there is help. There is treatment. There are treatments that are effective, and you have to find the right one, and it may take a couple of tries, but there are effective treatments out there, and people can get help.
Well, I love your CEO, Keita Curry,
yes.
and she said at the time, but you know, you drive by centers that say pediatric care or cancer, mm-hmm. the cancer center, And this is like one of the first suicide prevention signs that's out there, just like that.
It's very groundbreaking. I believe it's the first in the nation that has a sign on the outside of a building in such a prominent area showing people that there's help.
Okay, Lynn, you've been so great to give us the update here. One more time on that lifeline, the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline, 24/7. English and Spanish crisis counselors are standing by should you need them. The number is 800-273-8255, 273-8255. I will give it to you again. I understand you answer over 100,000 calls, chats, and texts in 2018. Okay, Lynn is going to actually step out in a few minutes to talk with our news team, Fox 11 News. Are they standing by there? Yeah, okay. So Lynn's going to be on our news. So Lynn, go ahead and step out, and I will bring in the other two guests while you do your news story. We are a news station here. Olympic and Bundy is where Fox 11 in Los Angeles is at. So I'd like to welcome my other two guests. Courtney, you want to introduce yourself?
Yeah, hi. My name's Courtney Cruz. I'm a program coordinator at the Suicide Prevention Center.
What does a... Tell me your title again.
Program coordinator.
Okay, what do you coordinate?
So essentially, I supervise the supervisors who are the direct, you know, voice to the Suicide Prevention Center. They're the ones who oversee all the volunteers and staff, so I oversee them. In addition, I help with the crisis line, even taking calls as well as supervising myself. In addition to that, I also work with the resources for the crisis line, do community outreach, and just any logistical things that come up with the crisis line.
And how long have you been there?
A year and 4 months.
Oh, you're a newbie.
Yes,
welcome.
I am.
Welcome. Congratulations on
Thank
the job.
Thank you. Thank you.
And how did you get your... And I'm going to come to you in a second, Julia.
No.
Yeah. We have Julia standing by as well. I went so long with Lynn so she could step out and not
course.
Miss anything.
No, don't worry about it. Yeah.
Courtney, how did you get in the door there? What brought you there?
Yeah, so at 13, I had a friend tell me that she wanted to take her life. And at 13, I didn't really know what that meant. I didn't understand it. And so I coincidentally looked up the Lifeline. I looked at the Suicide Prevention Center, and it had tips on how to talk to someone who was suicidal. And I got her that help that she needed. She attempted suicide 5 times, and each time she called me before taking her life. So I was the one who was calling, the police. I was the one who was talking to her parents and communicating.
At 13.
Yeah, and then coincidentally at 19, my roommate at UCLA wrote her suicide letter to me, and she told me what she was going to do and when and how. And fortunately, she was able to get the help that she needed and was rescued and is now, they're both safe, but those are the two people who bring me to the Suicide Prevention Center.
So Eunice just must be a little angel sitting here.
I would say that.
Really. Right, and to be in two situations like that. Do you? What did you study in school to qualify to have this position?
Yeah, so I studied neuroscience while I was at UCLA, but what more brought me to this position was that I worked a lot in the mental health for UCLA, so I was a part of an organization named Active Minds, and I worked at bringing the suicide prevention, ideas to the campus, whether it be standing before kids went to class and saying, this is what suicide prevention looks like, these are the warning signs, and creating events for students who had depression and had experienced suicide ideation themselves, and to talk to them and, have a panel of students to open about mental health. And those events continue now through at UCLA, and all that outreach and everything I did there is really what, got me to where I am now. And I began as a supervisor before coordinator.
Well, I think that you, Courtney, and Julia are going to be my therapist today, because I'm dealing with two scenarios. One with a young person, maybe a little bit younger than that, about that age, give or take. And I'm going to just get some words of wisdom from you on what to pass on to this young person who's dealing with another person.
Yeah.
And maybe we can be a little voice for them. And Julia, you also can be wisdom for me, because I'm dealing with a colleague whose adult daughter, ended her life in December. And so, it's the early stages of grief. And tell me your story and introduce yourself,
yes,
please.
My name is Julia Asaya Boyle. I came to D.D. Hirsch. I lost my son in 2011, April of 2011. He was 18 years, 2 weeks shy of his 19th birthday. So I am one of those people, as soon as it happened, I just was asking why this happened. What is suicide? Yeah. Because I did not see it coming. He was, as you said, you know, smart, good looking, I mean, gifted, you know, a leader. He had all of the qualities that it was still unbelievable that he would have, you know, wanted to end his life. So I had a lot of questions, and coincidentally, via I have a daughter who went to Pali, and through her therapist at school, told me that I should go to Didi Hirsch. So Didi Hirsch has an 8-week survivor support group.
Oh, they do.
And I would not have survived without it because I felt like I was alone. So obviously, yes, for the questions that you're asking, because you just feel like you're alone and nobody understands. But to go to the 8-week survivor support group, there were people that looked like me that had lost children, that had lost spouses, and we just supported each other. So, and then immediately I actually got active with Alive and Running because I wanted to do something in my son's memory. So I started Team Julian, and we've been fundraising since 2011. I think we've raised over $70,000.
Isn't that
just my team?
So powerful.
Yes, it is so powerful. It's palpable. I mean, I think I wept the first time that I did, you know, the walk. But, you know, every time you go, you meet people that are just starting out that have just lost someone. And so, and you see the progress, which is, you know, what's happened in my life is like, you know, you're first broken, but you start picking up the pieces as you're surrounded by other people that have had a similar experience.
Well, when we did the walk, I invited my girlfriend down, who invited then Matt's family.
Yes.
And to have his parents there, and we all had buttons made with his picture. And I just love that walk because people are wearing T-shirts with the loved one's name, and there's photos, and there's the quilt that has different photos. There's grandmothers, there's young people, there's every ethnic race. I mean, it really is a coming together.
It is. It is. Yeah. I could not have survived without it. They've become like my family. They really have. And I recently trained to be a co-facilitator, which means that eventually I will be co-facilitating some of the survivor support groups myself.
Isn't it interesting how life takes us into certain directions that we never expected perhaps we would be at?
Yes.
And now you are using it to give back. That's a pretty amazing step for you.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
I'm excited about it. I felt that I needed to get to the next level to give more, to give back.
See, I knew this would be a difficult topic. It's a difficult word, suicide. But I knew that we would have some power coming out of the different stories here. Julia, did you tell me your son's name? I'd like to remember him with strength.
His name is Julian.
Julian.
Yes, named after me.
Did I meet you all at the walk?
Yes.
Oh, my gosh.
You have spoken to our team two times in the past 2 years.
On my selfie stick?
Yes,
you did. You bring a lot of people.
Yes, I do. I think our team has been as big as 70. I think we're one of the biggest teams.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yet. Okay. I didn't recognize you in your coat and your suit jacket there.
I know. Yes.
Yes. Yes. Team Julian.
Team Julian. Mm. Yeah. We're one of the biggest teams at Alive and Running.
Okay, so Courtney, let me get back to you for a moment. The two girls that you encountered during this scenario, a difficult time in their life, are you still in touch with them? I'm just curious.
Yes, I'm still very good friends with both of them. The first one I just saw recently, actually, we hung out, and my roommate from college also, we're very close. I actually went with her to therapy a couple of times just to help her. And yeah, we're really great friends still.
You are a really good friend. Would you say they're in the clear? They no longer go there with thoughts of suicide, or they have tools in place to stop from getting too far?
Yeah, I think that both of them actually still have thoughts of suicide, but now they have the tools necessary to recognize when these thoughts are getting a little bit too further down the line and they need that kind of support, or they know what to look for or how to get that help that they need, which they didn't have before.
So you're saying for some people it doesn't go away sometimes?
Yes, for a lot of people who have been suicidal or have attempted suicide in the past, it sometimes doesn't go away. It's something that they deal with every single day and manage and cope, just like someone with diabetes. They cope and manage it every single day.
Okay, so that really does show the importance of the D.D. Hirsch Mental Health Services and the Suicide Prevention Center, for sure. Julia, I guess my question for you would be, you know, when I heard you come into the meeting today that we heard you lost your son, what do you want people to say to you? Because I know my colleague is dealing with this. You know, what do we say to him?
That is one of the things that when you know, I took about a month off from work, and going back to work, one of my colleagues was telling me that everybody at work was saying, what do we say to her? And what I think the best thing is to just act as normal as possible. Sorry for your loss. And if there's anything that you need, just I'm here for you, you know.
It's that simple. It's okay. Sorry for your loss, and I'm here for you.
I'm here for you because, you know, some people say, "I, you know, this too shall pass," and those are just not the right words to say.
I don't know. A parent losing a child, I don't know if that ever passes, right?
No, it does not. It's a void that will remain in your life. It just, the pain changes. Okay. That's all it is. You get through it. You don't get past it. You get through it, you don't get past it. And, you know, my best friend at work said, you know, Julia, if you need to cry, just let me know. And you know, if you need me to be there, we can go outside and you can cry. And, I mean, she gave me permission to just feel what I felt. And it was the best feeling in the world. Yeah.
I think my friend, because it's beyond colleague, it's friend. Mm-hmm. I think he's at a point where it's still very fresh December, where he thinks that the pain should be gone or still there, or you know, and I try to tell him that it doesn't have to be gone. You know, you love someone so much, it doesn't have to be gone today.
No, and I think that's the other thing, is that people put pressure on themselves to be a certain way, but grief is something that, you know, it's a process. You know, and you cannot rush it. You know, today you might smile, tomorrow you'll be boo-hooing, you know. Mm-hmm. Something that you saw that reminded you of them. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you just have to think about it. My son was in my life for 18 years. You know, I carried him in my belly. So how do you just think that he's gone and, you know, he's always going to be in my heart? And the pain is always going to be there. It's just different.
Mm-hmm. Well, I tell my friend, too, you have these other reasons for which to live, to function, to work, to stand up, to get up.
Right.
Do you find that you did some of that? These are the other reasons that keep me going?
Well, I'll be honest. I have a daughter, and the next day after he passed away, I knew I had to be strong for her.
Right.
That's what kept me going. And I just had to find a reason to work through what had happened, which is why I did what I did, got active and tried to understand what happened.
So I'm thinking of your son being 18 years old. Had he been out of high school or no?
He was out of high school. Yes, he was at SMC.
Okay, so Courtney, you were dealing with the first situation at 13 years old. That would be what, junior high-ish?
Yeah, I was going into freshman year of high school, yeah.
Okay, that's a young age to have a friend come to you and say, I'm thinking of suicide. Mm-hmm. What was your initial reaction?
At first, I was confused because I'd never heard the word suicide. I didn't understand what mental health was at the time. And so I was just confused. And I remember distinctly the first thing I told her was, I'm here for you and I will help you figure it out because I don't know.
Did you tell an adult?
So first I Googled how, you know, the suicide prevention line, and then it said on there, the information said, tell an adult if you're under the age of 18. And so I told her parents. She told me not to, and she begged me not to, but I said, you know, you're telling me you want to die. I have to tell your parents, and I told them.
And how did she react to that?
She was scared. She was terrified that they were going to have a horrible reaction, but her parents were, what do we do next? How do we figure it out? And they got her the help she deserved.
So it was the right move.
It was definitely the right move. It was a scary move, I'm not going to lie, but it was definitely the right move.
Mm-hmm. And did her parents react the way you'd hoped?
They, I think, reacted the best that parents could, hearing that their daughter wanted to die. At first, they were shocked. They were confused, just like I was, and then said, well, why? And then they said, you know what? It doesn't matter why. Let's just get you the help.
Okay. Lynn, come on in. Lynn's joining us after stepping out to do an interview with Fox 11 News. Julia, let me get back to you now. Your son is 18 years old, living his life. Did you, as you look back now, see any signs now that you can identify?
Well, here's the thing. Like you said, you know, he's teenager, I'd say almost young adult. And I'm sure if you talk to a lot of parents that have young adult, you know, they tend to isolate and, you know, they're in their room, they're either with their friends or they're texting there. So he did those type of things. And so nothing ever struck me as different. And he was starting that thing where, you know, he doesn't want to kiss mom and, you know, and stuff like that.
Don't want to be seen by with mom, drop me off down the block.
Exactly. So it's almost like that I just, you know, thought it was just normal teenage behavior. Yeah. But I will say that on the day that he chose to take his life, that there was a significant change in his behavior where he actually wanted me to be in his room and he wanted to talk to me and he, you know, was connecting with me in a different way that he normally had. And this is something that suicidal people do sometimes, which is he picked a name and told me that he had a friend that was thinking of taking his life. And he said his friend's name was Jim. And it struck a chord with me, and I had never heard that name before. And I said, Julian, but who's Jim? And, you know, would you like to talk about it? And he said, you know what, I know that Jim has been unhappy for a long time. And, you know, I wanted to talk, and he said, no, Mom, I want to rest. And I said, you know, when something's bothering me, I like to talk about it. And he said, no. And, you know, teenage boys don't want to talk. They don't want to talk. But I just remember having that feeling the entire day. I was thinking, who is Jim? Who is Jim? And I called home, and he had left. And that night, you know, teenagers are out late, and we got a knock on the door. And it was policemen, and they told me that my son had taken his life.
Mm. You know, my father died in an accident, a scuba diving accident, so I know that knock on the door. Boy, gosh. So that's so interesting to me that the day of was the only time there was any kind of, he didn't have depression, wasn't on medication. Wow, that must have been such a shock.
Yes, it was. It was just like I said, it was like the rug had been pulled out from under me. I had no idea. And like I said, he was loved. He was a leader. He was brilliant. I mean, you know, his friends actually had a vigil on PCH for him. And child after child just came forward and said how Julian had spoken to them when nobody else would speak to them. He was that kind of a kid. He was the advocate for the child that was, you know, ostracized by other people. And, you know, sometimes I feel like he took on the pain of other people where he was sensitive, but he did not pay attention to his own pain. And when it got too much, he just decided to end it.
Well, I remember going to the service for my friend, and it was packed. Remember, he played on the baseball team, went to college, had a lot of friends, lifelong friends. And you think of someone who has so much abundance and their life seems so really neat and great and so many reasons to live. And that service, it was just so surreal because you're like, but you have all of this. What happened? Lynn, you want to jump in?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a good point because people often will look at people who have died by suicide and not understand it and think those very things of they had it all. Why? Yeah. And, you know, suicide does not discriminate and it affects anyone of any age or gender or background. And it's really not about what you have. It's about that they are likely suffering from a mental health issue that they just have not talked about, have not sought help for. And, you know, that's why it's so important for people to know that we can talk about suicide and that there is help for people out there who are struggling and that seek out someone, you know, a friend, a family member, a coach, a teacher, or call our crisis line if it feels like you don't have anybody.
Yeah. So Julia, did your son, Julian, did he leave anything behind? Any notes, any message, any...
Julian did not leave a note, but I found journals. And I will say this to any parents that are listening. I always had seen that he had journals, but I felt like he's a teenage boy. I want to give him his privacy. Well, had I seen those journals while he was alive, I believe that I would have gotten him some help, because there was a lot of darkness in those journals. A lot of darkness.
And you never saw this darkness.
I never looked at the journals because I felt that he needed his privacy.
But you never saw signs of darkness in other aspects of his life?
No, I did not. I did not. So, you know, I know there's privacy issues as far as you know. But, you know, I do wish that I had seen those journals while he was alive. I think, you know, I would have gotten him some help.
And did any friends ever say, well, we knew this, we knew this? No.
No, no, they
did
not.
That's what's so scary for me.
Well, you know, one of the things that I will say that I've attended Teen Line, I've helped with some of their volunteering trainings, and a lot of teenagers have told me that it's almost a code. The children or teens do not want to worry their parents. They would rather tell peers what's going on with them.
Courtney, have you found that as well?
Yeah, I found that, you know, of course, with my friends, neither of them went to anyone but me. They didn't tell their parents. And it was myself who, you know, was fortunately there for them. But sometimes even your own peers aren't there, or they don't feel even safe to be able to say the word suicide to their friends.
I don't think at 13 I would have known what to do. I've been like, okay, I can't believe that you actually looked it up, but maybe your younger generation, you have the internet, and maybe that was something easy to do.
Yeah.
I think I might have maybe ignored it, hoped it would go away.
Yeah, I think that's most people's reaction, or they think, oh, you're just going through something right now. It's just a phase.
Because you don't know.
Like, yeah,
you don't know.
Exactly. And, you know, sometimes people use the word suicide or kill myself in a very... lighthearted way, or they don't use it to the extent that it actually means. So it's easy to not really understand the weight of that word.
And I think too, if you're not there emotionally, you don't understand the gravity of what they're going through, and how dark it feels and how lonely it feels for you to understand that this could be real. So I guess, Lynn, that brings you into the conversation. When do you know it's serious enough and not just a flippant kind of loose comment of the day?
I think when you start to notice the warning signs in people. So when you know, and you take it seriously, because it's easy to dismiss some of those suicidal thoughts. It's easy to think, oh, they're just joking, or they don't really mean it. And unfortunately, I've talked to too many survivors who have said, I didn't think they were really serious. And so look for those warning signs. Look for somebody who is expressing feelings of hopelessness or helplessness, like they don't belong in the world, they don't have a purpose, they're a burden to others. Those are some really clear signs. When people are talking about suicide, or even on their computer searching about ways to die by suicide, you know, looking at all of those things and making sure that when you recognize those warning signs, you do something. And whether that's what Courtney did and call and get extra backup support with the parents, and then help obviously with that person, you know, help her friend in that moment. Do something. Do not leave that person alone. And really just try to connect with them as a human being and ask them, you know, I'm really concerned about you. I'm noticing all of whatever warning signs you noticed, and I'm concerned about you. Are you thinking of killing yourself?
I had heard that if the person kind of has the way that they're going to try to do this mm-hmm. in mind, they're thinking about how to, you know, enact it, that's a serious sign.
Absolutely. The more detail and thought that has been put into a suicide plan, the more serious the risk is and the more imminent it is. However, people also can be impulsive at times too, especially if they're using substances or under the influence. So you want to make sure that you're asking them if they're feeling like killing themselves. If they say yes, finding out how they plan on doing it and when, and asking those hard questions. They're hard questions to ask somebody, but we often find, and especially in the crisis line, people are, for the most part, relieved when somebody understands what they're going through. And finally, somebody who doesn't look like they're going to panic and run from the situation, that you're going to sit there in that dark place with them and say, you're really going through a tough time. Let's talk and let's get you some help and let's get through this. I'm going to stay here with you.
I'm thinking of, again, I say that we all know somebody. I'd like to think, I don't know, Oscar, do you know anybody ever who's been touched by suicide? Oscar's our producer, Oscar Flores.
Yes, a couple.
Couple. He says a couple. Mm-hmm. So I remember I got a call from an acquaintance type young man, and a mutual friend had ended his life by suicide. And there's a bridge that's kind of casually called Suicide Bridge. Mm-hmm. And he said, I think he might have just fell. And I said, he might have, but he knew what he was doing when he went to that bridge, because he lives in that neighborhood. He knows the reputation. He knows the history. He went there, I think, for a reason, a cry out, whatever. But this person just couldn't believe that this dynamic young man had died by suicide. But obviously, he'd taken a step to go to a place that...
It's hard for people, if you haven't felt that deep, dark pain yourself of wanting to end your life, it's hard to imagine that in somebody else, and especially someone you care about. And that's why Didi Hirsch does so much in the community about educating about suicide prevention, helping people understand, you know, why someone is in pain, what it's about, what you can do to help, what you can recognize as far as warning signs. It's important that people are educated about it, because that's part of the I don't understand, you know, why it happened.
Courtney, you're the younger generation here. You know, I'm thinking when I was maybe your age, or even when you were talking about being in elementary school, we didn't ever talk about this. I'd never, like you said, I've never really even heard about it. There's got to be much more education now that we're talking about mental health in general. So I don't know if you can address this or Lynn, you'll address it. Where are we starting to talk? At what age are we talking about this now?
I think that, you know, Didi Hirsch Mental Health Services has done outreach to every age now. I was just at an outreach for eighth graders and talking about suicide and having a very honest conversation of what are the warning signs, what does suicide look like, what are those feelings in yourself and your friend, or even, you know, a parent, what does that mean? And so I think, you know, at every age, we're already starting to talk about it. And, you know, the youngest person to call a crisis line currently is 8 years old. So we do have that conversation is happening, and it's happening in a better light now, and especially with the Suicide Prevention Center being, you know, broadcast with its beautiful sign now, these conversations are happening with younger and younger, which is great, like Lynn addressed, because then we're more educated, we're able to understand, and we're able to get the help for ourselves and others.
You know, it's alarming, because I do know that figure of the 8-year-old. It's alarming that an 8-year-old is thinking that way. It breaks my heart. But also amazing that you got a call, that somebody knew to call at 8 years old.
Yeah, I think, you know, when you think of an 8-year-old, it's hard to imagine what could they be going through at 8 years old that would cause them that much pain. But, and especially with some of the services we provide at Didi Hirsch, you know, we're treating children that have had a lot of trauma in their life. Foster children who've had abuse and all kinds of things. So you can see how an 8-year-old could potentially get there. And I think with our outreach, and they see the signs, and they see the media, that's why it's so important when we're reporting on suicide to mention the crisis line number as a resource, which you already have done, because that's how people find out about it and learn about it. So we don't know where he found out about the line. Mm-hmm. And nowadays, younger kids are so resourceful online, they'll find it online. And if they have an iPhone, if you talk to Siri on your iPhone and say, I want to kill myself, what will pop up is, it sounds like you need some help. Would you like us to call the national? It sounds like you're thinking of suicide. Would you like us to call the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline? And it has a yes or no button of whether it should call.
Wow.
So, you know, we're getting more technologically advanced with helping teens and others in suicidal crisis, too.
Julia, you're starting to do some outreach. What kind of questions do people ask you?
Well, I'm going to say some of the outreach that I've done is, again, like Courtney said, you know, in schools. And mainly what I've done is actually tell my story. And a lot of times at the end of it, I have kids come up to me and say, you know, it's something that I thought about, but I never realized the impact that it would have on my parents. And just to hear how devastating it is, it's almost like the weight that they were feeling, the pain, transitions to you. So, yeah, I've had a lot of kids just come up and just say, thank you for saying that because I was thinking about it, but I realize how much pain it would have caused my family, you know, and just really changes their outlook on taking their life.
So you go to schools, you tell your story. Mm. What's your message? What do you want kids to know?
My message is just like, you know, Lynn and Courtney were saying that there's help out there. You know, you're not alone. You know, tell someone, tell a friend. You know, if I know you, you know, the one thing that I realize is they don't want to tell the parent, you know, they're not always going to tell you everything, but at least tell a friend, because if you tell a friend, like Courtney's friend told her, she got them help, you know, just to know that there's help out there. I wasn't able to help Julian. I, you know, if I had known then what I know now, you know, I would have taken his message about his friend seriously and I would not have left his room. I would have asked him, you know, is this something you're thinking about or can we get your friend help? It would have led to help. And so that's my message. Just tell anyone.
Mm-hmm. I'm looking at your facts and figures here of the fact sheet that she brought me here. Let's see. Middle-aged men and veterans are at the greatest risk of suicide. Every suicide attempt increases one's risk of eventual death. And I'm thinking of a woman I met at the unveiling of the Suicide Prevention Center. I think she'd attempted 5 or 7 times and was now a volunteer on your hotline. I was shocked by that. Is that Should I be shocked by that? Or
people who have attempted suicide are definitely at greater risk of dying by suicide. 41% of people who die by suicide have had at least one prior attempt. And so it's common for people to attempt more than once at times. Not always, but more so with women attempt more than men.
Says the highest rate of suicide attempts is among teens and young adults under the age of 25. Is this something you've seen all along, or are there changing trends? Or
unfortunately, it's trending up, and the attempt rates and even the death rate in teens is increasing. When I first started in suicide prevention 15 years or so ago, it was the third leading cause of death for 10 to 24-year-olds. It's now the second leading cause of death. So unfortunately, it's trending up.
What do we do about that?
You know, I think there's the outreach in the schools is really important. There is a law now that mandates schools that it's a law, AB 2246, which mandates schools to provide mental health and suicide prevention training to middle school and high schools.
That's progress.
So that is absolute progress. And talking about it, I know during Yellow Ribbon Week at schools in the fall, they do a lot of events and school announcements and talk about suicide. And
we didn't have that when I was in school.
I didn't have it either. And I'll tell you, I have a 14-year-old son who I'm grateful that he hears so much about suicide, of course, because of the work I do, but because I talk to him about it too. And he's aware, and he's had friends in crisis where he will ask if they're okay, or he'll tell me, I don't know what to do. And, you know, we talk about it. And making sure that kids are not feeling that shame or stigma about talking about it, that it's okay, that we all struggle with things sometimes, and that we can get through it, but you need help to get through struggles at times. So just reinforcing that with kids, I think, is really important.
Courtney, where are you seeing progress and hope?
I think I see it just in the fact that when I bring it up to people that I work at the Suicide Prevention Center, from friends I haven't seen in a while, they don't say, oh, why would you want to work there? They say, oh, I heard about, you know, the Suicide Prevention Center. Oh, I know about the Lifeline. It's less stigmatized now, you know, even if it's a little bit, even in the passing conversations. And sometimes when, you know, when I was still at UCLA, I would hear people say, oh, someone, you know, is going to call the Suicide Prevention Center. Like, I heard that. And these conversations are actually happening in real time. And I think that's where I'm seeing that progress, that it's no longer, oh, don't talk about it, or someone says, oh, they, you know, they died this way, rather than saying they died by suicide.
We are changing the terminology, too, because I know in the media we get a fact sheet of how, I don't want to say sensitively how to discuss it, how, I'm going to say powerfully how to discuss it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we used to, you know, the terminology used to be commit suicide and came from a lot of stigmatized, but in the same way we wouldn't say someone committed cancer or committed a heart attack, we would say they died from a heart attack or died from cancer, the same way they died by suicide.
Okay, all right. Julie, I guess I will ask you, as I think of my friend who is going through this, for you, when was it that you felt you could step forward on this issue in dealing with your own grief?
When you say step forward, it is, you mean?
I mean, you could not deal with this matter publicly. You could right. just go on and live your life with your family. But right. what was it that, how did you get to the point where I'm going to be part of this community in a positive way?
In a positive way. I honestly, I'm going to say, you know, everybody deals with grief differently. I felt like I could die by this pain.
Yes.
Or I had to turn it into something positive. And I just, it was the only way. There was no other way for me. I had to turn it into something positive to survive. And that's why I started Team Julian. I mean, right away.
What surprises you? What do you see out there?
As far as
when you're dealing with this issue, as people ask you questions, is there anything that still shocks you or surprises you? Questions that are asked, maybe?
Yes. What surprises me is when I first started Team Julian, I didn't realize there was a young lady standing behind me, had been standing behind me for the longest time in church. And when I announced at church that I had started Team Julian, she came and met me after church and she wept. Her father had died when she was a teenager by suicide, and her entire family did not want to talk about it. She was so happy to join the team. She's been walking with the team ever since. But I will tell you that that first walk, she invited her family to come, and they would not come, and they still have not come. And it just still surprises me how people just still don't want to talk about it, the stigma that's associated.
Are you finding older generations might still have a hard time with it? I mean, I think the younger generation, we talk about a lot of things.
I think that could be true. I think different cultural backgrounds, too, will have more stigma related to it and have a harder time talking about it or understanding it, that it's not a weakness. It's not a failure of some kind. It's mental health affects us all. And we, you know, it's one of those things where we have to be more comfortable talking about it. And we know that the more people share their stories and share their stories of hope and survival, those are encouraging to people and those are inspiring to people. I will say one of the best stories that I tell is, you know, we've been doing Alive and Running for many, many years now, and it used to start off with, it used to be mostly survivors coming. People had lost someone to suicide and honoring their loved one and walking in memory of them. And I remember just 2 years ago, I was talking to somebody I didn't know, and she was standing by herself. And so I went over and talked to her and said, thank you for coming. And, you know, who are you here to honor today? And she said, myself. I've attempted suicide, and I'm here to honor myself. And I felt like that was even a breakthrough in the stigma, that now we have people who have attempted suicide coming to our walk run, and honoring themselves is pretty inspiring.
Yeah. Well, you know, working in news, we obviously have covered the celebrities, the big names, the Anthony Bourdain, Kate Spade, and I think that has people looking at it, talking about it, and obviously for the news gives us a chance to then come out and interview you all to talk about the greater works that you all are doing. As we kind of wrap this up, we were talking earlier about a TV show on Netflix that you just stepped out to do an interview with my colleague. Tell me, I'll have you say the full name of the show.
13 Reasons Why.
13 Reasons Why. All right. And I think the question was, does a show like that, I don't know if the word is glamorize the issue, desensitize the issue? Where are we at with that?
I feel that there are really solid media guidelines out for reporters or producers on how to represent suicide responsibly. When we're putting stories out there, it's important to talk about it, and it's important to make sure we're addressing it, but doing it in a way where it is not creating contagion for teenagers, not creating copycat suicides. And there are lots of research studies that show that by portraying the method used, portraying suicide in a sensational or glamorized way or romanticizing it, can make it seem like an option, especially for a vulnerable individual, which teens often are, with all of the issues that they're struggling with, just kind of figuring out who they are in the world. Mm-hmm. So it absolutely factors in, and we need to make sure that as media portraying suicide, we need to make sure that they're doing it responsibly and in a safe way.
So if anybody out there is listening, I want to give out that number again. It's the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline, 800-273-8255. If you need to call for a minute, 5 minutes, I don't know how long they can talk with somebody.
They can talk as long as they need somebody to talk to. So mm-hmm. We're there 24/7, whatever time. So
I love that you're there. Do you want to leave with some final thoughts, some perhaps empowering thoughts as we together continue to talk about suicide, suicide prevention, your suicide prevention center that is so groundbreaking? And I just want people to know that if they live in Los Angeles, if they live anywhere around the world, that there are places, and I got to think the United States is probably pretty progressive when it comes to this topic.
Yeah, and you know, at D.D. Hirsch, we're really proud that we have some unique and innovative services there that are available, such as support groups for teenagers who have lost someone to suicide. It's hard to find support groups for teenagers who have lost someone to suicide, so we developed a curriculum around that and run those groups.
And that could be a parent, a relative, a friend.
Well, we have support groups for people who have lost someone to suicide, for adults, certainly. Yeah. But teens in particular, just getting them in a group, talking to each other. And often the kids are forgotten about sometimes in the family when the adults are dealing with someone who's died by suicide. There's so much to handle. There's so much grief. And so oftentimes the kids don't really have that place to talk and to get the help that they need. So we developed a teen support group for people who have lost someone to suicide. We also have support groups for people who have attempted suicide, which is a very unique model and is being replicated, you know, throughout the United States as we train other people how to do this very important work. So there's hope, there's help, there's light, and we're proud at D.D. Hirsch to be providing some of those services to people who need our help.
Lynn Morris, thank you so much. Courtney Cruz, some final thoughts?
Yeah, I think in a culture now where we have social media and we're pressured to look perfect or act perfect or have these wonderful lives, I think that to anyone's listening, I want them to know that it's okay to be sad for more than an hour. It's okay to have feelings that aren't positive all the time. That it's okay to think about suicide, but to also know that there is help, that whether it is just mental health treatment and you're not thinking about suicide, or if it is suicide treatment, such as calling the crisis line, that it's okay to not be okay. And I think that's something that we don't get enough of, that it's okay to have bad days, and it's okay to feel that you need to cry, and it's okay that today is just not your day. And I think that's what I would want anyone listening to know.
That's beautifully said. Julia.
My message would be to the survivors that have, you know, lost someone to suicide is that there's help out there for them as well. Dee Dee Hirsch is definitely a great resource for that, the 8-week survivor support group. And then after that, they have weekly drop-ins. They have at Culver City. I'm not sure if the new spot has weekly drop-ins. So even after you finish the 8-week survivor support group, you can have weekly drop-ins, because sometimes you have a bad week. Sometimes you have a bad day. So, you know, there's help for us as well out there.
That's fantastic. Well, Dee Dee Hirsch Mental Health Services has been around for more than 75 years. So I think that they are definitely at the forefront of what's happening here. Los Angeles, obviously a big city, and I'm just glad we could do this podcast and talk here at Olympic and Bundy about a very, very important topic to me. And I guess I will see you at your walk in September. Do we have a date on the walk?
September 29th.
September
Sunday.
29th. It's a Sunday. If you're here in Los Angeles, feel free to join us, whether you're coming for the sunshine, the fitness, the support, the community, the hug, whatever it is. It's just really a powerful, powerful, powerful day. All right. Thank you to my guests from the Suicide Prevention Center. I'll leave you one more time with the Lifeline, the 24/7 Lifeline, 800-273-8255.
Thank you, Christine.
Oh, wait. One thing, Kim. Oh. Kim's been sitting here in the background. Yes.
Actually, the Suicide Prevention Center was started in 1958. Dee Dee Hirsch is 77 years old. So 1958 makes it 60 years old.
Okay.
You said the Suicide Prevention Center was over 75 years.
It's Dee Dee Hirsch.
Dee Dee Hirsch is over.
You know what? I work
years.
In news. We want to get it right. We want to get the facts right. So let me get this right. Okay. Dee Dee Hirsch Mental Health Services
has been around for
over 75 years. The Suicide Prevention Center.
60 years.
60
it
years.
Celebrated its 60th anniversary.
60th anniversary. Okay, I think we got it right.
Sorry.
So I have to end with the hotline, the Lifeline number, though. I have to end with that. We good?
Yeah.
All right, so one more time, the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline, 800-273-8255. And to all the volunteers, we thank you so much for your giving back.